calls are understood by dozens of other species, including birds and birders. For BirdNote, I'm Jonice Franklin. Support comes from Wild Delight Bird Food, offering a variety of blends designed to mimic the natural resources wild birds crave. Available at Chewy.com.
Hello, X-Ray listeners, and welcome again to Jazz in Portland. I'm Tom Scully, filling in for Thomas Smith. I want to let you know about some events for the week of May 4th. Monday, May 4th, at the Muddy Rudder Public House, 8105 Southeast 7th Avenue in Saltwood, Lloyd Jones, blues guitar and vocal, every Monday, 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesday, May 5th, at Sabor Latino, 1325 Northeast Broadway, Anandi's Latin Band, 7 p.m. At 13th Moon Gravity Well, 4513 Southeast 41st Avenue, Sophia Bornstein, 6-8 Trio, featuring Sean Beal and Ron Steen, 8 to 10 p.m. Wednesday, May 6th, at Arrivederci, 17023 Southeast McLaughlin Boulevard, Tom Grant and Shelley Rudolph, 7 to 9 p.m. Thursday, May 7th, at Wilf's, Jazz Happy Hour, featuring Carrie Pollitzer and George Colligan, 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, May 8th, at University Club of Portland, 1225 Southwest 6th Avenue, Heather Kaiser and Steve Christofferson, 6 p.m. At Murray Hill Tap House, 14550 Southwest Murray Shoals Drive in Beaverton, vocalist Shelley Rudolph, 7:30 p.m. Saturday, March 9th, at Alberta Street Pub, 1036 Northeast Alberta Street, lunch and soul with the Mel Brown Organ Trio, 1 to 3 p.m. Sunday, May 10th, at the 1905 830 North Shaver Street, just off Mississippi, Ben Fowler Quintet, 5:30 and 7:30 p.m. Stay tuned for more info on jazz in Portland and streaming online everywhere at xray.fm. Thanks for listening. Enjoy Portland music.
You're listening to X-Ray FM.
KXRY Portland.
At 91.1 and 107.1 FM.
And in Nehalem,
Wheeler,
Manzanita,
and Rockaway Beach.
At 91.7 FM. Streaming online everywhere.
Live and archived.
At xray.fm.
Radio is yours.
Radio is yours.
Radio
is yours.
Radio is yours.
Video music playing in the dark of night, you are most likely listening to VCR TV.
With your host and DJ Kyle Reese.
Friday mornings at 1 a.m. or anytime at xray.fm.
Radio is yours, radio is yours.
X-Ray FM wants listeners to know about Lloyd Eco District. Picture this. Monday, they're at City Hall ensuring sustainability isn't just a buzzword. Tuesday, they're revitalizing Peace Memorial Park, tending to plants and erasing graffiti. Wednesday, they transform Duckworth Dock into a haven of safe swimming and live tunes. Thursday brings vital workshops on heat and smoke readiness to residents. And Friday, a zero-waste block party. Lloyd Eco District may be small, but their dreams aren't. Their mission, make Lloyd a beacon of sustainability grounded in equity, resilience, and unwavering climate action. More information at ecolloyd.org.
This is Natasha Fisher. I am on the board for X-Ray FM. I am also the interviewer for Talk to the Hand, and you're listening to X-Ray FM. Radio is truly yours.
We just want to party.
you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Look how I'm living now. Police be tripping now. Yeah, this is America. Guns in my area. I got the strap. I gotta carry 'em. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go into this. Yeah, yeah, this is gorilla. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go get the bag. Yeah, yeah, or I'ma get the pad. Yeah, yeah, I'm so cold like, yeah. Yeah, I'm so dull like, yeah. We gon' blow like, yeah. Slipping now. Look what I'm whipping up. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping up. Look how I'm geeking up. I'm so pretty. I'm on Gucci. I'm so pretty.
Yeah,
I'm gonna get it. Watch me move. This is Sally. That's a tool.
Yeah.
On my Kodak. Black.
Program is Trump's DOJ, now Big Oil's personal law firm. Trump's Justice Department just sued the state of Minnesota yesterday in a desperate bid to kill Attorney General Keith Ellison's six-year-old climate fraud case against Exxon, Koch Industries, and the American Petroleum Institute. Minnesota's case accuses Big Oil of running a multi-year campaign of deception about climate change, while sticking taxpayers with the bill for climate change. All the deaths, all the destruction, all the drought, the forest fires, everything, right? ExxonMobil alone raked in roughly $775 billion during the years that they were funding and promoting these lies. Federal judges have already tossed similar Trump lawsuits against Michigan and Hawaii, and the DOJ filed copycat suits against New York and Vermont this week to try to prevent them from suing Big Oil. Ellison says the suit is frivolous and meritless and that he's moving to dismiss it. This is bizarre. The Justice Department of the United States has essentially become the in-house counsel for the world's biggest polluters. I mean, when you see this, when you see the United States Justice Department, which is supposed to be, you know, equal justice under the law is what it says, you know, on the top of their building, is supposed to be representing us, and we're the ones who are being poisoned. We're the ones who are getting the cancers from the fossil fuels. We're the ones who are dying when our homes are burned down in wildfires or flooded in floods or wiped out in tornadoes and all that kind of stuff. When you see that, you get, you know exactly who's running this country. And it ain't us. It's not us at all. This is just wild stuff. Meanwhile, Senate Republicans want $1 billion for Grampy's fancy Epstein dance hall. Late Monday night, last night, Chuck Grassley and Senate Republicans dropped a $72 billion spending package on the floor of the Senate. And tucked inside was a $1 billion line item for, quote, security adjustments. Right. These are tied to Trump's gold-plated White House ballroom. Remember when the White House promised this thing wouldn't cost taxpayers a dime? And Trump actually raised several $100 million for the ballroom. It came from, you know, people giving him, you know, big corporations that wanted favors from him. He gave them the favors. They gave him the money. So now, where's that money? Nobody's sure. Seriously. And now he wants the taxpayers to pay for it. They're running this through reconciliation, by the way. So they only need 51 votes. Meanwhile, Iowans are going hungry. Chuck Grassley, of course, represents Iowa. They're going jobless. And they're uninsured under Grassley's watch. Senator Brian Schatz pointed out the one silver lining to this bizarre request for $1 billion for Trump's $700 million Epstein dance hall. Now, every senator, both Democrats and Republicans, gets to cast an up or down vote on funding Trump's vanity project. You'll be able to know if your senator voted for your tax dollars to pay for the Epstein dance hall. Working Americans pick between groceries and insulin while Trump gets a $1 billion dance floor. That's the deal Republicans are offering this country. And it just, you know, it exemplifies this, again, going back to Reagan. Louise keeps saying, you know, when I die, she's going to put on my tombstone, it all started with Reagan. Because that's my mantra. I mean, you know, because it's true. Ronald Reagan took us out of the New Deal. Right? We had this period in American history when FDR came into office in 1933. We were in the depths of the Republican Great Depression. And about 10% of us were in what would today be called the middle class. Today it's 43% of us. And FDR put into place a series of government programs based on the economic theories of a British economist by the name of John Maynard Keynes, largely. And, you know, basically built a floor that the middle class could stand on with tax dollars. He raised the tax on wealthy people, on the morbidly rich, to 90%. So we've got, you know, the money to pay for everything. I mean, after World War II, we were at 135% of GDP in terms of national debt. By the time Reagan came into office, our national debt was down to $800 billion. It was less than $1 trillion. Because the middle class was so successful. Two-thirds of us were in the middle class. Two-thirds of American families. FDR built that. Harry Truman built that. Dwight Eisenhower built that. The Republican president in 1956, when he ran for re-election, the cornerstone of his campaign was the fact that he had dramatically increased. He'd almost doubled the rate of union membership in the United States and dramatically increased the number of people eligible for Social Security and increased Social Security benefits. That's what he ran on. And he got re-elected. A Republican with Richard Nixon as his vice president. Jack Kennedy continued this in 1960. Lyndon Johnson continued this in 64. Richard Nixon continued this after the election of 68. When Nixon went down in flames for being corrupt and bribery and all this other stuff and Watergate, Jerry Ford continued the New Deal and the American middle class. The American middle class was continuously growing through this whole period of time. Now, here you've got three Republican presidents, Eisenhower, Nixon, and Ford, who were all encouraging union membership because they knew it strengthened America. They knew it strengthened the middle class. And then Jimmy Carter continued that after Jerry Ford. And then what happened in 1980? The Iranians took the American hostages, 54 hostages at the Iranian embassy, or at the U.S. embassy in Iran. And, you know, President Bonnie Sauter wanted to send them back home to the United States, but the Reagan campaign, it looks like it was Bill Casey, reached out to the Ayatollah Khomeini, and said, you guys hang on to the hostages, and we will send you spare parts for the American military equipment. They particularly needed tires right away for the F-15s. And Israel, in October of 1980, the month before the election, started shipping these tires to Iran on behalf of the Reagan campaign. I mean, this was... The New York Times has outed this story. Ben Barnes, the former lieutenant governor of Texas, was on the plane to Paris. He went to the meeting where they organized this thing with the Iranians. This is not in dispute any longer. Ronald Reagan's campaign committed treason for him to become president. And then once he became president, what did he do? On behalf of the billionaires who put him into office, the fossil fuel billionaires, the right-wing billionaires who put him into office, he said, okay, I'm going to roll back the New Deal. And Republicans have been doing that ever since. Every single Republican administration. You could argue that George Herbert Walker Bush kind of, you know, just was a placeholder. I mean, he actually raised taxes slightly, which pissed off all the billionaires. But then Reagan's tax cuts and George W. Bush's tax cuts and Donald Trump's tax cuts, you add them all together, it's more than $35 trillion. And that's our national debt. Not to mention, you know, $6 trillion, $7 trillion for the two wars that Bush and Cheney lied us into, along with over 7,000 dead Americans and hundreds of thousands of dead Iraqis and Afghans. Republicans do not like a middle class. Republicans do not like average working Americans. Republicans serve the morbidly rich, period, full stop. Give me one example of them not serving the morbidly rich and actually serving average Americans. I've been running this contest on this program for 25 years now. One major piece of legislation that the Republicans supported whose principal beneficiary was the average working person. It doesn't exist. At least not since Nixon not since Ronald Reagan's presidency. I mean, you might find some that go back to Nixon and Eisenhower, but those were not the Reagan Republicans. If America is to have any kind of future at all, if the middle class is to come back, as I was ranting about in the first hour, if we are to stop all this political violence, this violence against people of color and women, this violence against Democrats, this open, naked racism like we're seeing coming out of the Supreme Court, or at least the six right-wingers on the court, if we're going to put a stop to all this stuff, the first step in that is to reverse Reaganism, is to end this insane economic policy. This it's called neoliberalism that the United States has been groaning under all these years. And weirdly, in 2016 and 2024, that's what Donald Trump ran on, was I'm going to end neoliberalism. We're going to stop so-called free trade. We're going to bring the jobs back home. Americans were like, cool, no more Reaganism. Trump, of course, was lying through his teeth. He now runs the most corrupt administration in the history of America. It's one massive grift, him and his boys making literally billions of dollars just in the past 14 months. And his real estate billionaire buddy, Steve Witkoff, who's going to Moscow every couple months to consult with Putin. His sons are in it now with Don Jr. and Aaron, Uday and Kusei. It's wild stuff. I am so looking forward to when this country fully wakes up. I realize it's going to be a big lift because there's a billion-dollar machine out there. Fox so-called News, 1,500 right-wing radio stations, three right-wing television networks, all this massive infrastructure that was built by the Koch brothers and their friends. I get it. It's going to take a while. But I think people are waking the hell up. When Marjorie Taylor Greene is waking up, America is waking up. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I mean, that was seriously one of the things that pissed her off, is that the Republicans gutted funding for Medicaid, which is, you know, people in her district. And welcome back. By the way, today is a primary in Ohio. So it's two things about that. Number one, it's going to be real interesting to see how it comes out. I don't know if there's any, you know, major competitive races, but we'll see. And number two, it'll be interesting to see if any of the Ohio Republicans, once they win the primary and they, you know, their seat is re-secured, if they turn on Trump, as Mark Pocan is predicting. Keep an eye on this. So what's on your mind, Ike, in Charleston, South Carolina? Hey, Ike, what's up?
Yeah, hey, just a couple of things before I put out a challenge. Nixon was guilty of treason, too, for sending Kissinger behind the American people's back and telling Ho Chi Minh to hold on.
Yep.
And he would give them a better deal instead of taking the peace deal that was on the table that Johnson definitely wanted to push through.
Yeah, you're right. You're sort of right, Ike. It wasn't Ho Chi Minh. It wasn't the communists that Nixon reached out to. It was the South Vietnamese.
Right.
I forget his name. I think it might have been Park, the president of South Vietnam at the time. But he was the guy that Nixon said, "I'll make you rich if you just blow up the peace deal that LBJ and Hubert Humphrey had worked out." You're absolutely right. We have not had a legitimately elected president, Republican president, since Eisenhower. So you've got Nixon committed treason, Reagan committed treason, both cases with foreign countries, with foreign enemies.
Correct.
And then George W. Bush became president because his father's appointee on the Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas, became the deciding vote to stop the recount in Florida. And then, Donald Trump became president in 2016 because of the Russians. So, I'm with you.
And H.W., damn well he had his hands in that mess.
Well, and he wouldn't even have been president if Reagan hadn't committed treason.
Bingo. But I'll give two different Republican presidents credit for two different things.
Okay.
One, H.W., thanks to Ted Kennedy, they passed the Americans with Disabilities Act. Since me falling off a roof back in 16, I've come to really appreciate it. Because otherwise, I wouldn't be able to shop. Or
although it's worth noting that
anything.
That passed with a majority of Democrats and a minority of Republicans.
Correct. But H.W., he championed it as well.
Yeah.
And George W., I'll have to give him credit for the work he did on AIDS.
Yeah, PEPFAR.
He saved a lot of people.
Which Trump is reversing right now.
Yes, absolutely. But here's my challenge, and this is for the, as I call them, the Cro-Magna crowd out there, the knuckle draggers,
the barbarians,
the ones that have like Marjorie Taylor Greene that are coming to their senses and finally feeling just a little bit of shame for what they've done to us and our country. If tearing down part of the White House wasn't enough for you to reject this man, I don't know what is. But here's the deal. If you're really sorry about what you've done, here's your deal. You go to the polls in the midterms, and you go to the polls when the presidential election rolls around, and you vote for anybody but a Republican. And preferably vote for a Democrat, and then that way you can prove that you're sorry and you can come back into the mainstream of society, and maybe your parents and your family will own you once again, because we ain't playing no more. This is going to be a war if y'all don't get it straight.
I'm with you, Ike. I'm with you. At least a political war, not a physical war. But yeah, I'm with you.
Exactly.
Ike, thank you for the call. Thank you very much. Well said. 22 minutes past the hour. Missed my opening rant today? It's usually published over at HartmanReport.com, where you can read it and share it with your friends for free. Check it out, HartmanReport.com. When Ronald Reagan took over America in 1981, we handed him a brand gleaming new country. Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, Jack Kennedy, they had built America. We had brand new schools, brand new hospitals, brand new interstate highway systems, brand new airports, infrastructure. We were the envy of the world. And then Republicans came along and they said, well, you just cut the top tax rate from 74% down to 27% and everything will trickle down. Instead, what do we get? Billionaires and poverty. They said, hey, just deregulate guns and an armed society is a polite society. Instead, we've got more school shootings than anywhere in the world. They said, just kill off civics and history classes in our schools and liberate our young people to focus on science and math. And now we've got people who don't know how our government works. I mean, it just goes on from there. There's a whole rant about it over at HartmanReport.com titled FDR Saved America, Then the GOP Ripped Us Apart. Check it out. Three minutes past the hour. Welcome back. So what's on your mind today? Let's pick up some phone calls here. Richard in Houston, Texas. Hey, Richard, thanks for listening to KPFT. What's up?
Oh, my God. I hope I'm wrong. But, usually if it looks like it and smells like it, it is it. And it's going on right now. I gave you a copy of the book about Minnie Fisher Cunningham when you were here in Houston.
I remember.
Yeah, a friend of mine who's so much smarter than me, got every time I bragged about it, he said, "Nate, why don't you do an endowment, a scholarship at SHSU, your alma mater, you know, right here where she's from." Mm-hmm. And so finally I'm like, yeah, let's get this done. And it was in the works. It was getting traction. And we were going to do $7,000 a year. And out of that $7,000, $2,000 would go to the scholarship. When we get to 10 years, it'd be $50,000. It would sustain itself on its interest, $2,000. And the criteria was essays. And we picked out the questions. It was for grad students. Rolling along there. And then yesterday morning, they jerked the world out from under us and said, we're not going to do essays for scholarships anymore.
Really? Why?
This has got to be Project 2020. This is Greg Abbott. This is them state-supported, state-controlled
right-wingism.
Yes, Trumpism. That's exactly. Yeah. I can't help but believe that's what it is. Now, I hope I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. We got an appointment today at 3 o'clock to talk to them about it, and they're going to try to schmooze us or intimidate us. Or, I don't know, I just look stupid. I'm really not, is what I'm about ready to tell them. But it's just amazing to me that, you know, I can't help but think, Tom, if this endowment would have been, because it's in her name, it's Minnie Fish Scholarship, the nickname that FDR gave her. And we were so proud of it. We were just giddy over it, getting traction and everything. But I can't help but think, if this was about Charlie Kirk, would y'all be bouncing this off? Would y'all be doing this?
Yeah.
And I hope I'm wrong, Tom. I really am. But, if you know, like I said, if it looks like it and smells like it, it usually is it.
They have not given you an answer to your question why?
Yeah, it was a bogus BS. Like I said, don't own my hat and tell me it's rain. They said, yeah, it's too much for the students. It's just a burden for the students. Give me a break.
Wait a minute. Having to write an essay is a burden for the students?
That's what the answer was. So I'll get to the bottom of it.
Let them use ChatGPT.
Sir, I'm sorry.
I said, let them use ChatGPT.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
That's crazy.
I mean, it was getting so much traction that we were going to get 3 years worth in the next month. I had people trying. I'm like, no, don't send me any monies. And that's one of the things that just kind of stuck out like a red flag. This lady that's the director, developmental director, was like putting me off on giving me an address and an addressee where to send these donations.
Right.
And finally, you know, when I said, look, I want to strike while the iron's hot. People are wanting to donate right now.
Yeah.
So I'm in a meeting, and I just found out in this meeting, no essays.
Incredible.
What are they going to base it on?
Well, you can do a multiple choice, I suppose. You know, Richard, thank you for the call. Keep us up to date on how it works out, okay?
All right, I will.
It's a hell of a good. It's a great project. I so admire you. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
27 minutes past the hour. Talk media for the sane among us. We'll be back with your calls right after this. Florida's gerrymander hits court. DOJ runs cover for Exxon, and Fox forgets the Constitution. Good morning. This is the Commonwealth Report, news for the public, not the powerful. You can sign up for free at commonwealthreport.news, and it'll come right to your email box every day for free. Is Trump dragging us into another forever war? The Middle East is on a knife's edge, and the Strait of Hormuz is the blade. Donald Trump told Fox so-called News that Iranian forces would be, quote, blown off the face of the earth if they target American ships running his so-called Project Freedom convoys through the strait. CENTCOM says it's destroyed six Iranian small boats and shot down cruise missiles and drones aimed at the United Arab Emirates. Iran's own president called the IRGC strikes on the UAE completely irresponsible, reportedly carried out without his knowledge. Trump's dismissing falling American support as, quote, fake polls. Senator Lisa Murkowski wants to introduce an authorization for use of military force to put a leash on this president. She'd better hurry. We've seen this movie before, and it never ends well. Did Sam Alito just lose his mind on the bench? The Supreme Court fast-tracked the killing of Louisiana's majority black congressional district yesterday, and Justice Sam Alito went after Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson with the kind of language you don't typically see from this court. Joined by Thomas and Gorsuch, Alito called Jackson's dissent, quote, baseless and insulting and groundless and utterly irresponsible. Jackson, dissenting alone, said the majority, quote, unshackles itself from constraints and is throwing Louisiana into chaos. Governor Jeff Landry already suspended the May 16th primaries so Republican lawmakers can redraw their maps. The 6-3 ruling guts a key piece of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. Black voters in Louisiana are about to lose their seat at the table, and Republicans in Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, and Alabama are already lining up to do the same thing. This is gerrymandering by Supreme Court fiat, and it's an emergency for democracy. Senate Republicans want $1 billion for Grampy's Ballroom. Last Monday night, yesterday night, Chuck Grassley and Senate Republicans dropped a $72 billion spending package, and tucked inside it is a $1 billion line item for, quote, security adjustments tied to Trump's gold-plated White House ballroom. Remember when the White House promised this thing wouldn't cost taxpayers a dime? Yeah, never mind. They're running this through reconciliation, so they only need 51 votes. Meanwhile, Iowans are going hungry, jobless, and uninsured under Grassley's watch. Senator Brian Schatz pointed out the one silver lining. Now every senator gets an up or down vote on funding Trump's vanity project. Working Americans pick between groceries and insulin. Trump gets a $1 billion dance floor. That's the deal Republicans are offering this country. Is Larry Kudlow and Fox allergic to the Constitution? Federal Magistrate Judge Zia Farkhi apologized in court yesterday to Cole Allen, the man accused of trying to assassinate Trump at the correspondence dinner. Why? Because Allen, a man with no prior criminal record, presumed innocent under our laws, had been thrown into 24-hour solitary, a padded room, no windows, five-point restraints, denied access to his lawyers, and even a Bible. Farquhar called it tantamount to solitary confinement, noting he'd never seen a January 6th defendant placed in five-point restraints, and reminded everyone that pretrial detention is not punishment. Then Fox's Larry Kudlow lost it on the air, hollering, "We're apologizing to this guy!" Yes, Larry, because that's how the Constitution works. Even Fox's own legal analyst Jonathan Turley had to remind Larry that prisoners do, in fact, have rights. The Bill of Rights doesn't look like an asterisk, or doesn't have an asterisk for people you don't like. Is Florida's new map the worst gerrymander in history? Ron DeSantis signed Florida's new congressional map yesterday, and within 2 hours, voters and the Equal Ground Education Fund hauled him into court. The lawsuit calls it, quote, one of the most extreme gerrymanders in American history. And here's the kicker. DeSantis's own map drawer, Jason Porita, admitted in a hearing that he used partisan data to draw the lines. That's a flat-out violation of Florida's 2010 Fair Districts Amendment, which 63% of Florida voters approved. Under the new map, Republicans could win 86% of seats with 55% of the vote. Tampa gets sliced into three districts, Orlando into five. This is Trump's national strategy. Steal the midterms with a ruler and a Sharpie, because they can't win them fair. Is Trump's DOJ now handling big oil's personal law firm? Trump's Justice Department sued the state of Minnesota yesterday in a desperate bid to kill Attorney General Keith Ellison's 6-year climate fraud case against Exxon, Koch Industries, and the American Petroleum Institute. Minnesota's case accuses Big Oil of running a campaign of deception about climate change while sticking taxpayers with the bill. ExxonMobil alone raked in a roughly $775 billion during the lying years. Federal judges have already tossed similar Trump lawsuits against Michigan and Hawaii, and the DOJ filed copycat suits against New York and Vermont this week. Ellison says the suit is frivolous and meritless, and he's moving to dismiss it. When the Justice Department of the United States becomes the in-house counsel for the world's biggest polluters, you know exactly who's running this country. And it ain't us. And that's the way it is today, Tuesday, May 5th, 2026. I'm Tom Hart.
Share the Tom Hartman Program with your friends. Our podcast, The Hartman Report, is absolutely free and available wherever fine podcasts are available. And the entire three-hour podcast is available over at TomHartman.com. So MAGA Mike and the Republicans want a religious test for people running for public office. They want to know that you are sufficiently Christian to be worthy of being elected. Right. MAGA Mike is one of these seven mountain evangelicals. There are seven domains where these dominionists believe that we need to have religion completely take them over. Education, religion, family, business, government, military, arts and entertainment, and the media. Seriously. This is not what Jesus was preaching when he said, give unto Caesar what is Caesar and unto God what is God's. This is the opposite, in fact, of what Jesus was teaching. It's the opposite of Matthew 25, where Jesus said the only way to get to heaven is by feeding the hungry, healing the sick, helping the poor. This is counter-Christian, anti-Christian, in fact. In fact, I think you could say it is the Antichrist's work. There's a piece about it over at HartmanReport.com. Check it out. Welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour, picking up your calls here. Catherine in New London, Connecticut. Hey, Catherine, what's on your mind today?
Well, Tom, thank you for picking me up finally.
Sure.
I wanted to talk about the Supreme Court because I'm almost finished with the book by Leah Littman called Lawless, and the subheading is How the Supreme Court Runs on Conservative Grievance, Fringe Theories, and Bad Vibes. And it is fascinating how they've packed the court, as you were saying. You gave me a wonderful history lesson, by the way, while I was on hold. I didn't know that much about American history, unfortunately, especially political. But now I'm getting very well-versed. And I was very active. I'm now 80, and I was very active in the late 60s and early 70s because my driving issue was abortion. And when we got Roe v. Wade, settled law, stare decisis, right?
We all took a breath.
Stare decisis, we're good to go.
Yep.
And then they start chipping away and chipping away. And then when Dobbs came down, I almost said, that's it, I'm done. But I said, no, this is the time to fight.
Yep.
So I'm not quite sure, but Leah Littman has made me feel much better in the sense that I know that there are women out here still going strong who are going to fight back against this repressive regime. Yeah. And as somebody in one of my chats said, we're not going to wear burkas.
Yeah.
So, sorry.
Well said, Catherine. Well said. And thank you for sharing. And thanks for the tip on Leah Littman's book. I just ordered it. Or just, you know.
Oh, it is. She's actually said, she said that she's putting out the paperback in the summer, and she's going to have to write a whole new forward because it was before that last disgusting Supreme Court thing.
Yeah.
Okay, dear.
Yeah, it's
enjoy
like this,
your day.
Thank you. It's like there's a new horror every week. Thank you, Catherine. MJ in Seattle. Hey, MJ, what's on your mind today?
Well, good morning. I sure enjoyed coming to see you at Town Hall last winter.
Oh, thank you.
And I also remember that, and I go way back to when you had a cat named Fang. Was that right?
I did. Yeah, he died a couple months ago.
Oh, well, there was an earlier kitty cat that you talked about in back at the very beginning.
Yeah,
of
back
Air America.
Decades ago, I had a cat named Higgins. Higgins and Fang. We're both feral cats that nobody could deal with and wouldn't cotton to anybody, and they ended up being my cats, and I miss them both.
You had some great stories.
Yeah.
I loved it. And you and I share a birth month, so happy birthday. We were both born this month, a certain number of years ago.
Yep.
And I'm calling about a really important time in my life. I was really active. I don't want to be discouraged about it. I was trying to get gun sense legislation through because I had a child pretty late. One of my children I had late in life, and I was really involved in their education, and people breaking into the schools and shooting the children up is just not, it's not okay. Yeah. We could do something about it. We could do something about it. And I fought. I was in the organization. I fought and fought and fought for it. And the other thing that weighs on my heart that we could do, we should do, is that we should have universal health care. Mm-hmm. Just like every other well-off nation in the world. Mm-hmm. And so I fought and fought for that as well. But it's not a time to let go of any of these important things and to inspire people around you to set their sights for what we could do for each other if we would only get together on it.
Agreed. Very well said, MJ. Yep.
That's why I called. Thank you so much for everything you do.
Sure enough.
Bye-bye.
Good talking to you. Mary in Seattle. Hey, Mary, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was wondering if you've ever had an immigration lawyer on your show, because I think that people could benefit from a discussion of the intricacies of their visas. And the reason I'm bring this up is because a friend that I've worked with in the past, he came from Mumbai to LA to go to North Carolina to do a show. He had a B1, B as in boy, 1 visa, which they pulled, interrogated him for 18 hours, took away his phone. Then they got back on the plane with him, 2 agents, back to Mumbai.
Wow.
So I have worked with him, and I talked to a lawyer friend, and she said that the B1 visas are very tricky because they allow a person to take orders but not money. And I've worked with him, and he has definitely taken money.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I guess he just kind of went along not knowing this or knowing it or whatever, but he got nabbed for it this time around.
Amazing. Well, they're looking at anybody who is not white. I mean, if your friend had been from Norway, I don't think there would have been a problem. This is Stephen Miller and Donald Trump's project and J.D. Vance's project to make America white again. And, we were 58%. Excuse me, we were 84% white in 1965 when we undid the racial quotas for immigration, and we're now 58% or 54% white, and we're heading toward less than 50% by the end of this decade. And that's what's got the racists freaked out. It's just that simple. And they're going through every single visa with a fine-tooth comb, and when they find people who aren't white people, get the hell out of the country. I mean, this is just, these racists that Trump has brought into his administration. I mean, keep in mind, Trump's first brush with the law back in 72, I think it was when he and his father were busted for refusing to rent to black people. His job as the teenage assistant in his dad's office was to write the letter C for colored on the applications of black people. Before that, his father had been arrested in a Klan rally in the 20s. I mean, this runs in their family. They are afraid to do military service. They will lie about things like bone spurs. You have no obligation to your country. They don't pay their damn taxes. They run scams and grifts, and they hate black people. It's astonishing that this guy became president. So, Mary, thank you. Thank you for that story. Marilyn in Chicago. Hey, Marilyn, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Again, thank you so much for all the incredible information that you disseminate to everyone.
We do.
And, yes, you do a great job. I just wanted to expound on the idea of, Donald Trump with the incredible, racist and misogynist statements that he's made and behaviors that he has exemplified in his past. But one thing that really concerned me is that nobody brings up, when he supported Charlie Kirk. And again, I want to state at the beginning that, of course, I do not believe that that assassination was in any way acceptable. It was deplorable.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
But, it was deplorable. But his statements about women are just so completely unacceptable. And some of the things that he said are the following. He called upon women to abandon careers and education, to submit to a godly man.
Hang on just a second. The he you're talking about here is Charlie Kirk, right?
Yes,
okay,
Charlie
keep
Kirk,
going.
Yes. Yeah. To raise more children than you can afford. The ultimate goal for every girl should be marriage. Every single decision should push them closer to finding a husband. He discouraged women from entering the workforce or pursuing education. Mm-hmm. Kirk even professed husbands should do everything he can do to not force his wife into the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
He said that women should not attend college. High school girls should prioritize marriage and children above all else. He also stated that grades do not matter. A true patriot should not care about them. He's suggesting that Christians get bad grades because they do not succumb to the woke teachings of the U.S. education system and the left.
Yeah.
And I could go on. I mean, he was just so many.
He was a classic right-wing, conservative crackpot.
Right, right.
He was just very good at manipulating language and communication.
Right. Yeah, and his wife even said a lot of things, similar things.
It's ironic that she's now trying to run his organization, and you've got Candace Owens going, nuts about it,
right.
And a bunch of right wingers who are saying that she's a grifter, and I don't even follow it anymore. It's just so sad.
Right. I know she said that all women should be released from the anxieties of feminism.
Yeah.
And you should rely on a man, and your path to happiness is staying home.
Yeah.
You're right. She doesn't do that.
I think it's going to be interesting to see if there's anything to these rumors about her and J.D. Vance. God only knows, right? Marilyn, I got to run, but thanks for the call. That was interesting. It's 46 minutes past the hour. I'll be back with more of your calls in just a minute. Stay with us.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's your media support group for We the People. Stay tuned. Welcome back. Samsonite in West Hollywood. Hey, Samsonite, what's on your mind today?
Yeah. What are your thoughts on what the country would be like if Kamala Harris was president?
A lot would depend on whether she had Congress to back her up or not, because she had some pretty good plans. I mean, her plan to help people start small businesses, her plan to help first-time home buyers, those were pretty solid things. So it's hard to say. Why?
I mean, she couldn't get the votes. She couldn't even meet the primaries back in 2016 when she ran.
Right.
And she was just propped up since Biden decided to not run last minute. She was just propped up compared to how Trump was running from the get-go.
Yeah, he'd been running for 3 years.
And the only reason why Trump, well, let's face it, the reason why that Trump ran, won, is because he ran against Kamala.
I think she was a poor candidate. And there are people who are trying to resurrect her candidacy, saying that she should run for president in 2028. I am not one of those people. I think she should have run as governor of California, frankly. And there may still be time. Actually, I don't think there is time, because they're doing their primary right now, aren't they? If she runs for president, I don't think she can make it through a primary just like she couldn't in 2016.
Yeah, it's a shame that the Democrats can't, get together and actually, do things the right way from the start. I mean,
the problem here was Joe Biden said he was going to be a one-term president, and then he decided at the last minute he was going to go for a second term, and He should have kept his promise. He really should have. Samsonite, thanks for the call. Gary in Monroe, Georgia. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom. How are you?
I am well. Greed has no heart. Gary, what's up?
Thank you. You're very kind. Greed has no heart. You're very kind, Tom. But we understand it, though.
Mm-hmm.
We truly, yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to preface my remarks first by saying this. I am still hopeful.
Me too.
But I'm reality-based. And, you know, elections are the first stop. We must change the, you know, we must elect the right people. Mm-hmm. But I'm not so sure it stops there, because will elections change be enough? And why I say this, the third of the countries can be very violent. You see my point?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately. So yeah. That's all I got to say about that. Just keep in mind that sometimes elections are not... Do you agree sometimes elections may not be enough?
Well, enough for what? To produce
political change? Yes.
No, elections are never enough. It requires an energized electorate for anything to happen.
Exactly right. Perfect answer. Now, greed has no heart. I believe, and I said this before, this is worse than Franklin Delano Roosevelt's challenge. And back then, when greed was one to ten, was greed was a 9.9.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a 10, because we have this internet that's poisoning the minds of everyday Americans.
I agree.
You combine that with greed, you got a very, very serious situation, to say the least.
I agree. Well said, Gary. Thank you very much. And social media in particular is poison. We'll be right back. Hey, thanks so much for sharing our program and for reaching out to our stations and sponsors and letting them know that you're listening. It really means a lot to us.
Empty hands, promises written in shifting sand.
51 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Picking up your calls here. Russ in Fort Myers, Florida. Hey, Russ, what's up?
Oh, hey, John. How you doing?
Good.
Can we get off politics for just a second?
Sure.
And I've got a kind of a public service announcement. The ad you just had on about the health kit that you take around is really nice, because it gives people, you know, freedom to do things. Well, I just got back from a month in Europe, and unfortunately, my fourth day in Colmar, I got bronchitis. And so, no problem. I got online. This is a company we've used before. It's called Doctors. You go online. You fill out.
Russ, is this an infomercial? Why are you telling me this?
No. This is if, like, a lot of people don't like to travel because they have health issues, and they don't know how they're going to get health care when they go over to Europe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and most European countries, you can just walk into a doctor's office or a clinic or a hospital.
Well, you can, but if you're, but
I've done it.
Imagine this. Yeah, me too. All over Europe.
I realize there are telemedicine doctors who will sell you things, I'm not going to go down. I'm just going to end this right now. Kyle in Los Angeles. Hey, Kyle, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to point out that this religious test that Pete Hegseth is talking about implementing for the military and pushing, it is unequivocally unconstitutional.
Yeah.
It's a direct violation of Article 6, Clause 3, which says there shall be no religious test for any office under the United States.
Yep.
And it's one more reason that Donald Trump and Pete Hegseth should be impeached. I just wanted to also make people aware, another representative now, John Larson from Connecticut, has introduced new articles of impeachment. But he hasn't yet forced a vote like Al Green did on his articles. And So I think people need to push him to force a vote on that, because that's the only way it's going to...
I think it's coming. If the Democrats can take the House, there's no doubt in my mind Trump is going to be impeached next year. He won't be removed from office. It won't, you know, it won't get two-thirds of the Senate. Probably won't.
Well, I think it's important to keep building momentum for it.
I agree.
Going into the midterms and building the vote count, yeah, even if he doesn't get impeached before the midterms.
Yeah. We need to put it on the record.
Just a real quick bug note or whatever, I recently started a petition on MoveOn.org for this, so if anyone wants to help push Representative Larson to force a vote on his articles of impeachment under Rule 9, mm-hmm. There's a MoveOn petition for it now.
Very good. Very good. Okay, Kyle, thank you very much. Thanks for the information. Tom in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm kind of nervous. I haven't called before. But, I'm Jewish and I'm very pro-Israel, and it's very, very difficult for me right now, all the hate and the bigotry. And also, I'm pro-Israel, and the thing is, pretty much most of the news you hear comes from one side, and you know they don't say, you know, they like, why are they in bombing in Lebanon? If it turns out Hezbollah has a ginormous underground combat system, and they have all these missiles and rockets that they're shooting into Israel all the time, and Israel is trying to destroy those sites. And, you know, if you go back, like, before 2023, there were 150,000 Hezbollah combatants there ready to invade Israel. And Iran had put the seventh largest arsenal of missiles in the world in Lebanon, pointed at Israel. But it's like, in politics, it's like you can't, I mean, I was always a Democrat, but it's like you can't be pro-Israel.
I think it's possible to be pro-Israel and anti-Netanyahu and anti-genocide.
Well, but there is no genocide.
Gaza is a genocide.
They're not massacring.
According to the United Nations, Gaza is a genocide. According to any reasonable description of genocide, what Netanyahu has done in Gaza is genocide.
Well, I don't believe it's genocide because there are not 2 million dead Gazans.
And 2 million is not the threshold for genocide.
But they're just fighting back.
No, they're not fighting back.
Gaza started a war.
You don't destroy hundreds of thousands of homes, kill hundreds of thousands of people as fighting back. That's not fighting back. Netanyahu funded Hamas to the tune of over $1 billion for years. Because he wanted Hamas to be fighting with the PLO, and it bit him in the butt. Tom, this is a debate I really don't want to have. But Tom, thank you for the call. It is we're hitting the top of the hour here. Christopher Armitage is going to drop by on the other side of the break to talk about something way bigger than RICO: how to take down the criminals in the Trump administration. Stick around; this is going to get interesting.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
X-Ray FM is supported by our friends at Harka Architecture, whose mission is to uplift your ideas and our community. Harka brings expertise in toxicity, high performance, and resiliency to all their projects. They are a full-service architectural and interior firm specializing in middle housing infill, ADUs, remodels, and adaptive commercial reuse.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1931. That was the day that became known as the Battle of Harlan or the Battle for Evarts. Harlan County, Kentucky was coal country. Miners worked long hours underground and faced dangerous and often deadly working conditions. If they attempted to form a union, they risked not only losing their jobs, but also getting evicted from their company housing. Despite this response, starting in the 1920s, the United Mine Workers of America began to make headway in organizing miners. In Harlan, the miners who dared organize were fired. They and their families were thrown out of their homes. The company brought in hired guns to enforce the evictions and to keep the union out of the mines. Union miners and these gun thugs met on the road outside of the town of Evarts. A gun battle broke out. Three company men and one miner were killed. The governor of Kentucky once admitted, quote, "There exists a virtual reign of terror in Harlan County, financed in general by a group of coal mine operators in collusion with certain public officials. The victims of this reign of terror are the coal miners and their families." The Harlan County Mine Wars raged on for the next decade.